Coming up, Field of Screams, an hour from now. Haunted tales from the baseball diamond, the locker room, and beyond. If you get a chance and you're a member, go back in the stream link and listen to last night's show with Hal Herzog. He's a professor at Western Carolina University, talking about animals. Some we love, some we hate, and some we eat. It's all about our complex psychological relationship with animals. And it's a challenging book, and it's very well written. And here I am, last night praising just how entertaining that book is. And then I get halfway through Holy Ghosts, and I can't put it down. It's a page turner. Holy Ghosts, How a Not-So-Good Catholic Boy Became a Believer in Things That Go Bump in the Night. Gary Jansen's been telling us the story about how he grew up in a house in Rockville Center, Long Island. He experienced a certain amount of sort of what sounded like ghost activity to his mother, who told him about a woman that lived in the house. His mother was very sensitive to when things would change, almost like she was tuned into a different frequency, a frequency he didn't pay any mind to until he moved back into the house as an adult with his wife, their young child, who insisted that he was no longer going to spend time in his room, and a force that Gary began to recognize that existed only in his son's room. And that's just where we'll pick it up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Doubleday religion editor Gary Jansen explores his faith and also the netherworld in Holy Ghosts. Gary, what was the deciding factor for you to mention these apparitions, these shadow people, and this sense, this presence, this malevolent presence that seemed to be taunting you through electronic toys and through sounds and that creepy feeling that you were getting of almost like somebody with an electric mitten going up and down your back? What made you share that with somebody other than your wife, Grace?
I guess it was just as these things started stacking, I think I wanted to, I kept it kind of quiet, I was still trying to process everything that was happening to me. Maybe I'm just a bit of a late bloomer. It just takes me a while to figure things out. But I was kind of quiet about everything. But then I had mentioned it having lunch with a colleague who worked in another publishing house, and gave her really 30 seconds, like a summary of some of the weird things that had happened. No longer than that. It was really quick. And she turns to me with almost like glee in her voice and just says, "Oh, you have a ghost in your house." And I may have had that suspicion in my head, but had not really articulated it to anyone, or maybe even to myself at that point. And she said, I'm like, "How can you be sure?" And she's like, she just tells me about, that just sounds like classic ghostly activity. And that she had recently read Marianne Winkowski's book, which was When Ghosts Speak. And it was working for the publishing house that was publishing it. And she said, "Oh, you should contact her because she can actually tell you whether or not, you have a ghost in your house." And I was curious about that. And a little spooked, probably. So to speak.
But Marianne Winkowski, let's amplify her a little bit. This When Ghosts Speaks book, she's a fellow Catholic.
Right.
And somebody who understands and has found the ability to speak with to communicate with spirits.
Right. And I think, Marianne is the inspiration, obviously, for the TV show The Ghost Whisperer. And she has this ability to be able to talk to spirits, sense their presence or know that they're there, even more than sense their presence. And which I think for a lot of people, especially if depending on your faith, can freak people out a bit because there's definitely in the Catholic Catechism where, mediums are forbidden, and any kind of divination is something that's forbidden in the Catholic faith. On the other hand, there is a very powerful gift that comes from the Holy Spirit called discernment of spirits, which is something that, you know, for the most part, people believe is the ability to make good decisions, to know the right and from wrong. And that's really the very intellectual kind of explanation for it. But it also has another meaning, that there are people out there that have the ability to discern a good spirit from a bad spirit. And so there are people out there that have this gift, you know. I think my mom is someone who has that gift. Marianne is someone who has that gift. And these people have these abilities to lesser or more degrees. And, you know, but I think a lot of these people are written off. You know, you just know the history of, you know, of all of this.
Chicanery of that sort. And you, yeah, but you don't call Marianne Winkowski.
No, not for a while. You know, it's weird how it just played out. That was about 6 months from the time that everything happened, where things began to happen in March, till when I got Marianne's phone number. And it took me about another 6 months before I actually made that phone call. And during those 6 months, things were still happening in the house. You know, my wife was experiencing things on her own. But I really used that time, you know, to do research and to do a lot of research. So, you know,
what were you trying to figure out?
Well, I was trying to figure out what was going on. I wanted to know what was going on in the house, because once my son refused to go back into his room, I felt like, you know, there's something going on here. And my logical brain is saying, you know, this is all just coincidence stacked on coincidence. But then my faith was also saying, but no, there's something else going on. You know, and Pope John Paul II has a great line where he says there's no such thing as coincidence. And, you know, and that would be playing in the back of my head. So if there's no such thing as coincidence, you know, and I took that line pretty seriously, then there's got to be another explanation. So I started looking into the paranormal on the secular side, and then the supernatural on the faith-based side, and began to just read, because that's kind of what I do. and it really became, you know, so we have this word paranormal, right, which really is really just a secular term for the supernatural. And so I started just investigating, you know, different literature and started reading other books, you know, and just started pursuing, you know, what does Catholicism have to say about ghost, you know? I went to Catholic school for 12 years. No one ever mentioned a ghost, or for that matter, no one really mentioned angels or demons. But those are all, angels and demons are a basic tenet of the Catholic faith and other faiths as well. And so it really was an incredible journey, just, you know, through, you know, what Catholicism believed and also what other faiths believed as well.
So going through used bookstores, going through specialty bookshops,
right,
what do you find? What theologians do you find, and what do they say?
Yeah, you know, there's very little in the way of contemporary writings on ghosts per se, in the Catholic field. Plenty of written on, you know, on the secular side, or, you know, you go into any, of course, you go into any New Age bookstore and find plenty of things. But from a real theological point of view, it's very hard to find much. There's a guy, Peter Kreeft, who wrote a book called Angels and Demons, and he talks about ghosts in there. And he's at a Boston college and very well-respected theologian, and someone you wouldn't even really, you know, expect to even tackle that topic. Very, very serious theologian, and, you know, really deals a lot with, you know, church structure and philosophy like that. But has, you know, accepts that ghosts are real and gives his explanation for it, which is very interesting, because you can't really find much of that
right
in contemporary literature.
What does he say?
Well, essentially that, and I found this out from also John Harden too, who is another Catholic theologian, a Jesuit, that, you know, God can use ghosts, you know, that ghosts, you know, are the souls of the departed. So angels and demons exist on a different level. So the way that cat can't become a dog, you know, a human being can't become an angel or a demon. They're different species. So the human soul you know, as it moves on to its next step, whatever that step is, you know, exists as a soul, and God can, you know, and use the souls of the departed, you know, to help people, to warn people of things. And so it's basically Peter, you know, and then there's other things. He does talk about poltergeists. He acknowledges poltergeists.
Right.
He acknowledges that there are some, that there's the possibility of damned souls who
can't move on.
Who are tormented souls. Right. And then you have, I guess a damned soul would be a soul that actually ended up going to the netherworld. And then you would have the tormented soul who can't seem to move on to wherever it needs to go.
And so in finding this out, I mean, you start then to have sort of, you know, a kind of an undergirding, a theological framework for understanding, okay, so there are ghosts. My, you know, you're saying to yourself, my faith says ghosts can exist. May not be, you know, may exist only in the fine print of the Baltimore Catechism. It might only be in italics somewhere, but it's there.
Right.
And at some point you call Marianne Winkowski, deciding to follow up with that. What was the breaking point for calling her?
The breaking point was, while this was all going on, after my wife had miscarried, she'd become pregnant again, and we were about to welcome our second child into the world, but she was having a lot of complications during the pregnancy. And as you had mentioned at the you know, earlier in the show, that if you miscarry, you know, there's a possibility of complications for your next pregnancy. And not only that, but just worry. And so she was having a really difficult time. And, you know, so after my son is born, my son Charlie, this is something, you know, I came home that night after he was born, and came home, was by myself. I'd left my son with his grandmother. Only because I had no one to, you know, she was going to watch him the next day, and I needed to get to work because I had taken quite a bit of time off because she was just having complications beforehand, so I was out of work for a bit. And I fall asleep upstairs, and around 3 o'clock in the morning, that stinking, you know, doorbell just goes off. And I thought, I'm dreaming. Obviously, I'm dreaming, but my heart is racing like you would not believe. Now, this is the thing that kind of tormented us when we were growing up, that stinking doorbell, which, you know, would ring in the middle of the night, and there'd never be anybody there. And I'm just sitting there, like, frozen in bed and thinking, I just dreamt that. There's no way. And I'm just going to wait, because if there is somebody there, they'll ring again. And if I don't hear anything, then it means it was just a dream. And I just wait. And it seems to go forever. But then, ding dong, the thing rings again. And I curse and jump out of bed, run to the window because the bedroom overlooks the front of the house. There's nobody there. And I run out, run downstairs and run outside. And there's no one around. It is just, it's the dead of night. There is nobody anywhere in sight. And I think that was really, okay, you know, you've beat me over the head with this enough. And that was really kind of a turning point. And within a few days, I had made the phone call to Marianne Winkowski.
We'll talk about what she said here in just a second. I want to read the actual definition of ghost to which you alluded. Ghost, a disembodied spirit. Christianity believes that God may, and sometimes does, permit a departed soul to appear in some visible form to people on earth, allowing for legend and illusion. There is enough authentic evidence, for example, in the lives of the saints, to indicate that each apparitions, that such apparitions occur. Their purpose may be to teach or warn or request some favor of the living. I struggled reading that because I've turned off all the lights in the studio. So reading that just by the computer screen. And in calling Marianne Winkowski, you have found a fellow traveler, somebody who is, like yourself, a devoted Catholic, but also somebody who has long since become open to the idea that ghosts can exist in this on this plane. And I just want you to go through, tell the story of that phone conversation as she begins to relate to you without ever having been in your home or having had a conversation with you before as to what's going on.
Right. So I called, took me a while, but I did finally make the phone call to Marianne. It had been pressing on me, you know, call her for 6 months, and I just, you know, would ignore it. And but finally made the phone call, and we'd never spoken before. There was no information at the time. There was no information about me on the internet, none whatsoever. She knew the town I lived in, and she knew my phone number. She had had no contact with anybody else. She hadn't talked to my mom. She hadn't nobody. So, and I was very curious, like, how can she do this over the phone? And she can, you know, she can tell these things over the phone, which was impressive, but I had no idea how she could do it. So we just start talking, you know, and she was very warm and very friendly, and I was a bit nervous calling her, but she was terrific. She just, I really felt like I had met a kindred spirit over the phone. And she just starts asking me questions. You know, she's like, so the room in question is yellow, right? And I would say, yes. And she said, and you're standing in the room right now. And I said, yes. And she's like, it has no closets, right? And I went, yes. And she's like, who's Mary? And I went, well, that's you. Or she asked, who's Marianne? And I said, well, that's you. And she said, no, there's another Marianne in your life. I'm like, oh, that's my sister, Marianne. Oh, my God, there was her room. Oh, my God, you know, when she was a kid, she had fallen and actually slashed her wrist on a piece of plastic, like it gouged her wrist, you know, and always felt like something.
In that room, the same room that was Eddie's room.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, my God, how did you get that? And she started asking other things about the house, and she was just dead on, you know. There wasn't one question that she asked. Basically, she asked questions with answers to them, each and every one of them. And every one of them was right on. And they're very specific things about me, specific things about the house that there's no way that she could have known. And at the end of kind of that assessment, I could hear her almost scratching her head like, okay, yeah, I can see it now. And she says, okay, look, you got two things going on. And I went, two things? She's like, yeah, there's an old lady, you know, she's downstairs, very low, you know, she's very faint, but she's definitely there. She's been there a long time, you know, and she's probably known you for a long time. You've been in the house, and she asked questions, you've been in the house a long time. I said, yes, but she's known you since, you know, you were small. And, you know, she goes from the front door to the bay, you know, the picture window, as if she's looking for someone. And all of a sudden,
that's exactly the description your mom had given.
It's exactly the description. And, you know, that in itself just made my jaw drop and just, you know, wow. You know, it was just one of those wow experiences. And then Marianne says, and, you know, and I'm not worried about her. And there was dead silence. And I went, wait a minute. If you're not worried about her and you said there were two, that means there's something else in here, and you must be worried about that. And she says, yeah, you know, you have, there's a man who's only been in there about a year. That was almost a year to date that those things started happening in our house where everything seemed to escalate. He's only been in there about a year, and he's not too happy with you. And as she says these words, I could feel, you know, this thing go up my back, that electricity. And she says, I have to tell you something. He's standing right on top of you right now. and I freaked, man. I freaked.
So here's Marianne Winkowski all the way from Cleveland telling you that there is somebody standing over you right now and that he'd been there for 1 year. And that 1 year, if you go back that exact period of time, brings you back to March of 2007.
Right.
When all of these things started to happen in the life of Gary Janssen, the book is Holy Ghosts, How a Not So Good Catholic Boy Became a Believer in Things That Go Bump in the Night. But that's not the end of the revelations. And we'll tell you the direct tie-in to a little history for that neighborhood, for that house, that explains it all. And get a couple of your calls in, too, for Gary Jansen coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. So is it true? The idle mind is the playground for the devil. Do you think about things like ghosts and then feel bad about it, thinking, well, they can't possibly jibe with a belief in a divine, a belief in God? That was kind of the struggle that that Gary Jansen was going through. The book is Holy Ghosts, How a Not-So-Good Catholic Boy Became a Believer in Things That Go Bump in the Night. And he, as you just heard him say, he finally got on the phone, talked to a Catholic medium who assured him that she was right with her beliefs in the church, but also able to see that there were two forces in his home, a benevolent one, a neutral old ghost that was walking around the first floor of this 100-year-old home in Long Island, and then something a little different upstairs. And that's just where we'll pick up the conversation. What was it that was triggering the toys to go off, that shadow figure that Gary would see in the corner of the room, that presence on his chest while he was sleeping, that sense that his sister had once when she cut her wrist and when she felt like somebody had pushed her down? What was going on upstairs? We'll talk about that coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. So we'll get to a couple of calls before the top of the hour, and then it will be Field of Screams on a doubleheader, ghost night. Second up tonight will be a couple of guys who've been tracking haunted tales from the baseball diamond, the locker room, and beyond, coming up on Coast to Coast. But we're not done yet with Gary Jansen, and he's not done with his story. As he was saying, he was talking on the phone with Marianne Winkowski, the author of When Ghosts Speak, and also the person on whom the Ghost Whisperer is based. And Gary was saying that she was able to tell right away that there was this other force in the house. And what was your reaction when she told you that there was somebody standing over you, even as you speak? You said you were just terrified, but what did you intellectually, where did your mind go with that knowledge?
Yeah, it's great. It's a great question, Ian, because I think at that point, we talked about living in our head earlier on, and I think that's probably the point where things started moving away from my head to the heart. Even though it was a terrifying experience, it was something that I felt a switch. Intellectually, I felt like things had just moved, you know. Without getting overly theological, there's, you know, for Catholics, they begin every prayer with something called the sign of the cross. And what you do is you intone, you say, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. But when you do that, you're moving your hand from your forehead to your heart, and then across your shoulders from your left to your right, and then folding your hands as an amen at the end.
Or as some people call it, head to crotch, wallet watch, right?
Exactly. There you go.
Kind of expression.
And that's good. But if you look at that, this really hit me later on, was that it's a roadmap for the spiritual experience. Or for one's divine, you know, experience with God, because it begins in your head, right? You're touching your head when you begin that. But then it can't stay there. It moves. It has to move to your heart. And so it moves from your intellect to your emotions to you know, physical experience. And it just doesn't rest there either. It has to move across, you know, left to right, where that's kind of the Holy Spirit pierces the heart. There's a certain surrender there. And all of that leads to an affirmation, which is amen at the end. And I think what I experienced was a movement from the intellect to the heart, and a certain at that point, okay, you know what? This has been going on for a year, and I'm surrendering to this experience. And I'm going to surrender and just say, you know what? Everything's pointing, you know, even though my intellect had said, you know, right, no, no, no the whole time, there's something else telling me, yes, 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 there's something going on right here.
Weren't you worried, though, that it was a demon? No, you asked her.
You know, I think from my research that I had done, I didn't think it was a demon. What I didn't know, you know, not that I wasn't scared of it, because I was, you know, because I didn't actually understand what, you know, what had happened or why it was there. Or
I'm going to read to you from your book. Here's what you said.
That initial reaction, which was to Marianne, well, what is it, a demon?
It's just the devil. And right. She said, oh, no, it's not the devil, honey.
Right.
It's not a demon. I can't see those types of spirits. I can only see the spirits of people who were once alive.
Right.
And this one was definitely alive. He's 20 years old. He's only been dead about a year. Right. And he's been in your house for about the same amount of time.
Right.
So that means that you trace that back to March of 2007.
Right.
And you have a difficult call to make to your wife, Grace, to ask her just when exactly was that miscarriage? What do you find?
Right. So, you know, I hear all this information, and then I end up calling my wife to just ask her, because something was going off about this, you know, this date. What happened was that Marianne had given me all this information. I had shared it with a colleague who did some research for me and found that someone had passed away on March 7th that fit the description that Marianne was giving me of this person. And that would happen when I was at work. And March, you know, that date, that specific date in which all this happened really started to ring off in my head. And I'm like, what is that? What is that? And I'm like, oh, my God, I got to call you back. So I call my wife, Grace. And it turns out that the day that this man died is the same day my wife miscarried. And so that got even chilly and more, you know, it became more eerie, the story, as it moved along. And there would be things, you know, I don't want to give away the book, but there would be other things that start to spring up. You know, they're not coincidences. They don't exist. So they must mean something. And, you know, and as I continue that investigation of, you know, just what's this all about, more and more things would crop up that would be, you know.
Well, I can't ask you anymore because that's when I stopped reading. So I'm going to savor those last 40 pages tomorrow sometime when I'll find a good place at Bryant Park or something like that and read your book on a fall afternoon. But we have a couple of people who want to ask Gary Jansen some questions, and then we'll wrap things up on Holy Ghosts, how a not-so-good Catholic boy became a believer in things that go bump in the night. You, to just conclude that much, you find that there's a 20-year-old that died the same day that the miscarriage happened. You trace that sense that it's not a demon, but it's a spirit that is demanding attention. And Marianne Winkowski gives you some very specific directions, something that was running counterintuitive to what you were doing. She told you, whatever you do, don't talk to it.
Right.
Why?
Well, I think the way Marianne explained to me is that, you know, that spirits really don't belong here, and that her job is really to kind of get them to go on to the other side. But the more that you speak to a spirit, the more you engage the spirit, the more that you can give it more energy, the more you can keep it around. So, you know, she really believes, you know, and I think that was a point where I asked, you know, the question, well, if the old lady spirit's not bothering us, can we keep her and, you know, get rid of the other one? And she said, no, you know, they really, you know, they're not supposed to be here, you know, and you're doing, they're going to do them a service by not engaging them and, you know, and, you know, doing whatever we can to try to help them onto the other side.
If you have some spirits in your house, if you have ghosts like Gary Jansen, you can follow Marianne Winkowski's simple advice. It's a little risky. You have to turn off your fire alarms, I think. You may ask other people to leave the house, but you can essentially fumigate your home from ghosts. And Gary Jansen gives you the recipe for that in Holy Ghosts. And we'll get back to that in just a second. Let's get to Max in Nebraska on Coast to Coast, who's got a question for Gary Jansen. Max?
Okay, gosh, best ghost story I've ever heard. I'm sitting here with goosebumps. But my question would be, was there any other negative events in your life other than what was happening with your wife?
Oh, during that time period?
Yes.
The no, you know, I think... Yeah, I mean, I think just stress from work. The I mean, nothing, you know, nothing tragic like the miscarriage or anything like that. It was mostly, you know, just day-to-day stuff and dealing with those things.
Why do you ask, Max?
I just had a couple of years of a string of bad luck, I think, and usually bad luck changes.
Well, I think I'm sorry to hear about your bad luck. You might also have a ghost, maybe. Take a look at this book and see whether that formula for getting rid of ghosts could come in handy. Anthony is in St. Louis on Coast to Coast for Gary Jansen. Anthony?
Hey, good evening, fellas. I've been looking forward to the show since I heard about the premise the past few days, and it really delivered so far. I just had a question. Coming from someone who lives in a haunted house for the most part, did you ever have anyone come in and do any sort of looking for an EMF fields or EVPs or changes in temperature with a FLIR camera or anything like that?
Doing the Scooby-Doo thing, doing the ghost trackers thing.
Confirmation, right. But, I mean, you know, just to come in and investigate.
Why didn't you go the science route, Gary?
When I had spent all that time kind of doing research, science had pretty much said, you know, that evidence for belief in paranormal activity is mostly inconclusive. And so for whatever reason, I kind of just wrote that part off. And what was really important for me was, you know, kind of the philosophical, you know, the theological, the, you know, the historical. And it became really apparent to me that, you know, belief in, you know, supernatural or anything like that is unscientific, but it's not anti-scientific because science hasn't proven that it's not, that these things don't exist. But there's tons of historical data, you know, and that's what really kind of floored me. I mean, there's a combination of all these experiences, but also, like, looking at the history behind it all, you know, firsthand accounts and, you know, and there's truth there, you know. I mean, we always think that science is the end-all, be-all, but science gives us a layer of truth. You know, David McCullough, when he writes a history, doesn't use a scientific method, but we know when we're reading about 1776 or about John Adams, he's telling the truth, you know, or pretty close, because he uses a historical method. There's a philosophical method. There's the linguistic method. So all these things give us layers of truth, and for me, I guess science just it didn't jive with me at that point, and it's something I've looked into a little bit more since the experience ended.
Yeah, it doesn't satisfy. But you did look at it, and you have this formula for what you're supposed to do to get rid of the spirits out of your house. But you also have to consider that, in a way, you have inadvertently lived in a home where there was something else upstairs,
right,
even before March of 2007, before this 20-year-old victim that you describe in the book would have died in March of 2007. There was something else, right, that had pushed your sister at one point, and a feeling that, even when she was younger, that there was something not quite right in that yellow room that she was growing up in.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, it was really talking with Marianne over a number of times where, you know, she really helped me. She really helped educate me just about how, you know, what she believes, or how she believes the spirit world works, and that, you know, if you have a spirit in your house, there's a likelihood that, you know, that for lack of a better word, that the place can be a hotbed for activity, so that you can have things that are coming and going in your home at different points. And so
it's possible that that ghost on the first floor was there before there was a house there?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think, or at least someone had brought it in. You know, there's a possibility of that, because, again, without giving too much of the story away, there we find out information about
let's give away this much. She wants to know what you've brought into the house. Marianne Winkowski is asking you, just even over the phone,
yeah,
about antiques,
right?
You know, little things that you found at garage sales.
Right.
And the belief that when you bring something of somebody else's into the home, you're bringing a little of something of them with it.
Exactly. And that, you know, and what you said is, you know, it makes even theological sense. I mean, in the Catholic tradition, there's something called relics, right? And a relic is, you know, a piece of a saint or something a saint touched, right, that's supposed to be holy, you know? And I think, you know, in some ways we're all called to sainthood, and we're all, you know, tiny little saints, you know, regardless of how flawed we all may be. And, you know, that there is this transfer of power. There's this transfer of presence, let's say.
Of energy, yeah.
Yeah, of energy that, you know, so that you could hold on to something, you know, and, you know, I mean, psychometry is you know, that whole branch of the paranormal. But, yeah, there's that, but there's also, and this is something that was really kind of blew my mind, there's also the power of words, Ian, that you might not have gotten up to that part yet, but which that is an incredibly powerful thing. And sometimes we can be really flippant with our language, but words, you know, and how we say words and what we say and who we say them to can almost act, you know, like those relics and almost act like, and they carry great energy, great force with them as well.
Well, I think, you know, for people of faith and of almost every faith, the belief that words have power starts with Genesis.
Yeah.
And it all started with words.
Right.
And, you know, let there be light were the words, and then the action came.
Right.
And so we've always been tied to that kind of expression. So since I can't ask you what happens in part three, the last section of the book, I'll just ask you this. How's Ed, how's Charlie, and how's Grace?
Everyone is fine. Grace is doing well. Eddie and Charlie are just wonderful. And, you know, Charlie's about two right now. And,
is he seeing anybody in the upstairs like his brother did?
Well, you know what's strange is that before his second birthday, there was a time where Charlie would stop at certain rooms and not enter them, and would say, "There's a dark man in there." You know, was it his imagination or is there something else still going on? I don't know.
Has Eddie forgotten what he saw that led him to continually seek to sleep in your bed?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. You know, he has very little memory of any of that stuff. What he remembers mostly is just kind of hanging out with us and he remembers not wanting to go in the room. But when we press, you know, and I don't press him hard, but, you know, while I was writing the book, I would ask him questions about things, and not even leading questions, but just ask him questions about what he remembered, and he didn't remember too much at all, so.
Based on your experience, when somebody hears something go bump in the night, what do you think the percentages are that it's a ghost?
Oh, good question. I don't know. Yeah, I'm not even sure. I think sometimes it can be, you know, there can be a logical explanation for it, but what my experience is, you know, kind of proven for me is that, you know, there is more to the world than meets the eye. And maybe, you know, I was blinded to these things and maybe I've become more nearsighted in my belief in things like that. Much more.
Holy ghosts, how a not so good Catholic boy became a believer in things that go bump in the night. Here's the play, Gary. I'm going to finish reading part three. And if it's all right, I'd love to have you back on sometime and talk about how it ends on Coast to Coast.
Oh, terrific. Ian, thank you so much. This is such an honor to be on the show. Thank you for the opportunity.
You're very nice to say that. And my regards to the family and anybody else who's living in your house. Field of Screams, Haunted Tales from the Baseball Diamond, The Locker Room, and Beyond. We'll talk with two authors who've been tracking stories that you may or may not have heard of, but you've never heard them like this any way you look at it. Coming up next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett.